races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Good Tuesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at stevebick.com, at the website, streaming. We're still playing catch-up. the archive was smoking after yesterday, Casey loading up and trying to organize the 18 hours or so of NHC coverage. So still getting that done and organized. So those that are catching up on it themselves, I think we got it all up, right? We got I think they're all the sections, and Monday to come as well. So I made it back to upstate New York comfortably. Actually had a very, it was kind of fun. You know, you always, going to and from the contest, you invariably run into people that are on their way or on their way home. And, well, for starters, Pete and I ended up sharing a ride to the airport. He was leaving at the same time, although I think he said he had to sit for a couple of hours. But I got to my gate, and there was Chris Goodall, part of Team Goodall, with his dad and with Sally and with Sally's son David. And so there was they had a very good contest. In fact, I said, you know, in addition to Sally, I said, how did everybody end up? And you know, between the console contest and the main contest, 91,000. But I, you know, Chris was on with us. Was it last year, I think? And but, you know, it's a different kind of conversation when you're sitting in the plane for 3 hours. And we really enjoyed getting to know Chris Goodall more. So that was fun. And the wifey was waiting for us when I got home. So there's still plenty to digest from the NHC. And we'll have our conversation with waiting to hear back from David, actually. And I'm not sure what his itinerary was, David Harrison. Still probably, you know, you win when you're not a professional or, you know, semi-professional player. You win $725,000, and it, you know, the term, of course, life-changing, right? I mean, one of the things he'll I'm sure he'll talk about is that this essentially will allow him to retire perhaps earlier, and you know, with more options. I mean, that's about as life changing as it gets, right? That'll go a long way. So I'm anxious to talk. I always enjoy the, you know, the days later, you know, the conversation you have with the winner immediately after, you know, minutes after it ends, is a certain kind of, you know, there's a certain kind of elation. But then, you know, the replay later is always interesting when the winner, you know, has a chance to, you know, rethink the decisions that went right. I mean, so, you know, so many of the conversations, even with people that, you know, they cashed for big, you know, for big six-figure victories. You know, Ryan Scully, Ryan Patrick Scully, See, now he's doomed. Not doomed, but he's destined now to be a three name personality, right? He said, I don't know why they used my middle name, but now he's Ryan Patrick Scully. RP McMurphy, right? Right. I never thought of that, Ryan. It must have been McMurphy, must have been Ryan Patrick. But 200,000 for him and AJ Benton, 150,000. Even though you win, you're still thinking about what you could have done differently or what might have gone differently. One conversation we didn't get a chance to have. Usually Duke Matisse will come over and sit with us, but we didn't see him after the semifinals. Saw him after everything ended, though, and that was actually a lot of fun, staying in the event center after the final race, because the sports book downstairs apparently was at capacity. So they made the nice decision to keep everybody, you could stay in the event center, watch the game, the Ram Niner game, and the betting window stayed open. It was, and then that included the sportsbook betting. So a number of people, I bet you there were 150, 200 people that still stayed after final table and watched the game. And so Duke came over at that point. And I said, what happened? How did, he was sitting right, 9, 10, 11, 12. I think he floated as far as 14th, and he had three bullets. I said, I thought for sure, he had three bullets. I figured, how do you not get to the final table? And he had a very interesting response, which was he kept firing the same way he had fired to get to that point in the teens. And he said, I mean, could I have taken, could I have taken a $14 winner, a 5-1 or a 6-1? Yeah. But all that, he said, all that was going to do was get me to like 10th or 9th. He said, if I'm going to get to the final table, I want to be in a position to be within striking distance, of the winner. So Duke was actually trying, to get to, 230, 240 at that point, or more even, probably. More like 250, 260, so that he would have been a player two within striking distance of David Harrison. But Harrison, in retrospect, in fact, Chris Goodall and I were kind of chewing this up. In retrospect, and we'll see what David says, that lead was a very safe lead, and it allowed Harrison to to play fairly conservatively and just chip away and just basically, as they say on race notes and in the charts, hold everybody safe essentially, and even Benton and Scully did get within, $15 and $17, which is enough. But the way it played out, and given how difficult it was, one thing that Chris Goodall and I kind of agreed on, it just about how, the nature right now of the field size and so forth, it makes it very tough to, to find the kind of horses that historically, are really impactful, and that's not limited to contest play. That's day to day when we're all playing, right? I mean, it depends on your approach. There's plenty of people who, they're not looking for middle price long shots on a race by race basis as their bread and butter. There's plenty of people that, are very comfortable and very successful building tickets around, logical horses. That's everybody plays. Everybody's got their own, plays their own hand. So that part of the, you know, part of the post NHC thoughts, and of course there's there's plenty more. I mean, I after I left Vegas while I was still traveling, and I, you know, yesterday I read that statement from the NTRA in regards to Jonathan being disqualified, and then Jonathan came back, and after a kind of a volatile Sunday night, you know, kind of understood, it seems, the, you know, the real error in judgment to, you know, to think that, oh, it's okay, I'll be able to, you know, slip away to Florida and, you know, and come back if I'm on the board. It just was silly to even, it's hard to believe, really, that, you know, there was a thought process that led to that action. You know, Jonathan, you know, issued an apology, and you know, it probably, the dust will probably settle here in terms of, you know, any further action. The NTRA has really no other, you know, no other response. I reached out this morning and I said, you know, just they were pleased with Jonathan's response to this, and it certainly, you know, it certainly kicked up tons of discussion, and some of it, you know, very actually intriguing. There's several things, and in terms of the one part of this that I think the non-contest playing, you know, fan and horse player community kind of needs to understand, the nature of this particular contest is imperative in terms of being in person. It that's the whole nature of it. And I mean, I anybody listened to, you know, the 3 days, you know, kind of understands, it should understand what the on-site element represents, just like understanding the way in which you have to qualify to get in. There's no buying in. I mean, people, you know, responding to what transpired with Jonathan, you know, saying, well, that's a silly rule that you should be able to play remotely. No, you're not going to play remotely. It's not that, that's not what this is. This is a, you know, this is everybody under the same conditions playing a set of mandatory races and elective races, and that's what's special about this. It's not like, you know, weekly qualifiers or even the big online challenges and on big weekends. That's not what it is. This contest is a uniquely structured and specific opportunity. And the parameters are abundantly clear. So, I mean, everybody's saying, well, you should be able to play. No, you're not going to be able to play that way. That's not what it is. It's a convention of sorts and a gathering. That's you know, part of its uniqueness and part of its, you know, special element. So, I'm sure there'll be some further analysis and overwrought considerations of everything that went on. Meanwhile, a few news and notes. Hammer actually is going to slip in. I thought Rick and I were just kicking back and forth this morning, and I said to him, "Do you have a couple of minutes to, rather than wait till Friday, to flesh out, like I mentioned yesterday, about the graded state committee?" I really want him to, because I got an email you know, asking for clarification, you know, why, how, you know, why did, why does this get, you know, downgraded and et cetera? Why did the bluegrass get upgraded but the wood didn't, and back up to grade ones? So Hammer's going to explain that. In fact, let me give you a quick rundown. Steve Asmussen this morning in the next, I don't know, hour. And there's a bunch of things to catch up with Steve Asmussen the last couple of weekends. And even though there's about four stakes I want to talk about, including, of course, Pauline's Pearl winning the Ladies Classic. And last week he had that at the Silver Bullet Day, that Lacrette win, and we'll get an update on Echo Zulu, and there's some other stuff. But did everybody see that winner at Oaklawn? I didn't really think much of it when it happened, while it was happening. But maybe Hammer's got some thoughts. That favorite outlaw, the McLean's Music, that won on Saturday. That was very impressive, and you know, came in that sequence that we had talked about. You know, the pick five with the two maiden specials. Lucas won the nightcap. Asmussen won the first leg of that, and then came the, you know, the stakes, the Southwest and the King Cotton. But that favorite outlaw, 95 buyer, and you know, a sprint for now. We'll see. You know, we'll see how far this horse wants to go. This was that superfecta that had that Insolito and Slim Man and the horse of Lucas. D. Wayne had a fabulous day Saturday at Oaklawn. So anyway, so in fact, Case, reach for Hammer. Mike Pipey, who we haven't talked to in way too long, Mike Pipey is going to join us, and I'm looking forward to it. That win by Canoodling, which became a very important NHC result that shook up the board on Saturday in the megahertz. So want to talk to Mike Pipey about what seemed like a very clever maneuver moving Canoodling to the grass. And and coming away, God damn it, the ride by Carinos was absolutely fabulous. First graded stake win for him. So that was that. I thought that was one of the nice things that happened over the weekend. So Steve Asmussen and Mike Pipey. And let's see, Andy, later, of course, hour three. We'll talk to Andy. And not that there would, we had the two days wiped out by the snow. But Andy and the team were, you know, as you heard from Mig yesterday, they were covering, of course, they were covering everything else. So we'll get Andy's thoughts also on what transpired at Gulfstream. Todd Pletcher in hour three as well. And in addition to Todd's notable Saturday at Gulfstream, you know, with Life is Good, we'll talk about in Colonial and Colonial. Colonel Liam, Colonial, Colonial Liam, and a band, and some other, there's been a parade since we talked to Todd, 3 weeks ago probably. There's been a number of maiden winners. Emmanuel, though, that we were kind of looking to, and you know, we had, during the broadcast, we had noted that Emmanuel on Sunday was running at Tampa in that allowance that felt like an audition for the Tampa Bay Derby. And he won, and you never can tell, really, watching Tampa and you know, that sandy, fluffy surface. They never look like they're going that fast. He got an 89 buyer. And I'm just anxious to hear what Todd's thoughts are about Emmanuel and going back to, you know, to Tampa in what, 5 weeks? 5 weeks, I think, give or take. So Todd Pletcher, Andy Serling, Steve Asmussen, Mike Pipey, maybe Richard Mandela. I reached out to Richard about the very nice win, I thought, by Forbidden Kingdom on Saturday too in the San Vicente. But I hear the dulcet desk noise of Rick Hammerly. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's it's not Friday. It's Tuesday.
That's all right.
For me.
That's all right. Well, because I didn't want to wait until the end of the week for that news to basically fade away, and then you kind of rehash. So I thought while we were still in the shadow of the graded state committee, and because I got an email asking for why didn't the wood get upgraded at the same time again with bluegrass and blah blah. So I thought you could give the annual treatise.
Yeah. Well, we had. What is it, Tuesday? Yeah, so that seems like 2 weeks ago. But last Wednesday and Thursday, I think we touched on it on the Friday hour, but we didn't have the release out yet, so I couldn't say a whole lot. We had our annual Graded Stakes Committee meeting in Lexington, Kentucky, and it was cold, and we had it at Fasig Tipton, and one of the pavilions there. It was actually a great little spot to have it. Committee got together, and although we do meet numerous times during the year, mostly just business. This is the real deal, where we go through the books, the big books, 17 books of each category of racing in the country, and see if there is a need to move any races up or down in the graded stakes listed community. And we met and we did that. As a whole, it was kind of uneventful, which is great. We're not looking to make news, to tell you the truth. Some races went up, a few races went down. There really wasn't a whole lot of change. The one grade one that did reemerge was the bluegrass, and it got downgraded numerous years ago for various reasons, but the main reason was that just the quality was not there for whatever reason. There was a poly track a couple years in there where I think some horses stayed away, and that didn't help their ranking. And I will tell you this, not very often when a race gets downgraded from a 1 to a 2, they usually just kind of fade away. But I think the bluegrass was an exception. Obviously it was when they went back to dirt and horsemen came home, so to speak, and treated the bluegrass as it was historically been a real nice race for good horses prepping for the Derby. So looking over the numbers and comparing it to the other races, it fit to go back up into grade one status, and we voted accordingly. The wood, on the other hand, it's just the numbers weren't there, and that's just very simple. And all the criteria that we use and looking back and the horses that have run historically in the race over the last five runnings that we look at, the bluegrass earned its way back to grade one status. And if you look as a whole over the entire categories, some went up, some went down, and that's just kind of business as usual. But it was a good meeting, and that's what came out of it.
Rick, and we recommend, if for people that want to understand this and really see the inner workings, they're right on display at TOBA's website under the Graded State Committee tab. It has every aspect of this laid out, including the scoring system, and there's these binders that it's a highly involved. This is not, I really always take this seriously every year, Rick, because people think that it's just arbitrary, that Keeneland gets all the upgrades and they're biased against this track. That's not, this is a mechanical, there's a mechanical system involved here with scoring, and explain how those points are essentially accrued based on the fields and what they did coming in and what those horses do subsequently.
Right, and real quickly, I did a podcast with Peter Fornatel about 2 weeks ago now about the process, got into a little bit of depth, a little more depth about the process, but just like you said, you can go to the TOBA website and really, I just basically, went off of that as how we do it. We there's five categories we look at, and we go back 5 years of each running of each race, and we look at the points. Each horse earns different points when they run in different races. Graded races are worth more. We look at some ratings, some North American rating committee we have that rates horses and races. Percentages of the races that are filled with stake winners, and you get 2 years both ways. So if a two-year-old race or a three-year-old race, when they run in that year of the running, they don't have a chance to gather a lot of points because the horses haven't run that much. So you're looking for horses in that race to in the next 2 years. If those horses go on and run in good races and win races, then that fills up that race with points. The older division, same way. I mean, you have a bigger chance of having that race that you're running as a 4 or 5 year old being filled with horses that already have gained points because they've run more. So it's kind of a depending on the category, some races are going to have more points than they will when they go in the race, and some will have more as the race moves along. But we look at 5 years of each race, and believe me, there's 400, I think there was 455 graded stakes. We literally go through every one. Some don't need to be looked at. Some are like, okay, this one's good, this one's good, this one's good, meaning it is where it belongs. And if we get to one in question, whether there's a chance it could move up or a chance it could move down, we say, okay, let's talk about this one. And we'll have a discussion on, we'll go over more in detail of the last runnings, the field size, who ran in it, who didn't run in it, weather conditions, what might happen. We have notes of the races, and it's very extensive. And one of the things that I'm very happy about that the committee does, we have observers. In other words, there's 11 people on the committee, and I'm going to say, I think this year we had about 8 observers, and when I say observers, we had a couple people from NYRA, we had someone from Maryland Jockey Club, someone from Canada, various people. They sit there at the table, and I tell you what, it's a tough sit because you have to sit there and you can't say anything. And they watch the process, and then at the end we have them grade us and send in stuff, but they give comments, and they're, most of them are amazed at the time that's taken in each and every race, in each and every category over every race. There's no just, let's do this, let's do that. Everything is thought out, and we vote. And it takes a super majority to move a race up and basically a majority to downgrade a race. So, and we vote, and whatever happens, happens, and we move on. There's no, let's do it again, let's do it again. There's a chance at the end of the day to call for a re-vote, but rarely does that happen. You vote and you move on to the next one. So it's a very long, tedious procedure, but in the end, it's very fair. And I really feel, you really feel that you did a good job when you're done. And, not everything the way you thought it was going to flow happens, but that's the way it goes. But it's all done in a fair process, and like I said, there's no major stuff. We don't go in saying, okay, we're going to cut 10 races here and 20 races there. There's absolutely no agenda, and whatever happens, happens.
One question, given the field size, and I don't think the graded state committee has any say in this, other than to evaluate what the entire national stakes scene represents. But in terms of the sheer number of stakes, I mean, given the shrinking field size and the shrinking foal crop numbers and horse community, the point is certainly been brought up, fairly widely about the preponderance of stakes. I mean, we have too many stakes, do we not? I mean, shouldn't we be working to pare down the stake numbers? I mean, given, how can there be this percentage of stake winners when the horse population has shrunk?
You know, that's the question that's talked about, and you know that, but you know, there's still, no matter how big the population, there's still races that are, you know, better than others, and so what's the top group of races? That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be ranking the races that are in front of us, and we need to decide which races are of the races that have run, which are grade three, grade two, grade one quality. And, you know, the numbers, like I said, the numbers don't come into it as far as, you know, it's relative, you know, of the races that we're given, whether it's, you know, if we have X amount of foals or X times two amount of foals, there's still those races run, and there's still going to be the relative grade ones and the relative grade twos and the relative grade threes. So unless we sit down and say, okay, we're going to pare down the grade ones to 20 and the grade twos to 30 and the grade threes to 40, you know, that's an agenda-driven type meeting. We don't have that. We just kind of let it fall the way it does. I understand exactly what you're saying. How can we have, you know, the same amount of graded races when we have less horses? But that relativity is still there. There's still, you know, certain races that are grade one quality with the races that have been run, if you understand what I'm trying to get to.
Sure. And maybe that's a that's a discussion. That's a, I'm just trying to think of what organization. It's a topic for the racing secretaries' gatherings, but it's more a, I don't know if it is it a jockey club topic? Is it a the organization that there's that separate organization that decides what, you know, the what is that that committee within a committee that evaluates the listed stake, the sales.
Yeah, well, that's the reason we do this. We do this to show the quality of the breed, and you know who's going to get,
right,
you know, mentioned in the catalogs and all that,
yes,
stuff. And that's our, you know, that's what we're looking for. The, you know, the top horses of what's out there today. So anyway, we, like I said, we get done with it. It's a long, tedious process, but you know, I think in the end, it's not like, boy, I wish we'd have spent more time on this, or I wish we'd have done that. No, I don't think anybody feels that way. And like I said, especially, you know, you feel good when the observers are going, wow, this is really done. And even if they sit there and maybe watch one of their races get downgraded, they understand the process. So we do that once a year, and then, you know, then we'll meet during the year and we talk about it. Can we improve the process, or is there a way to do this better? You know, we certainly don't just want to give it to the computer and take what it spits out. We need to have, you know, discussion about certain races, because, you know, we can't just go, they're not just black and white. So,
sure.
But that's how it's done. And like I said, I feel very good about the people that are on there, and everyone devotes their time and energy into it. And it's, like I said, it's two long days of doing it, and we move on.
I appreciate this. It's always time well spent to, you know, to help, you know, those that are, you know, have never heard the, you know, the resuscitation, the, as it were, the, you know, laying out of how the, you know, how the sausage is made, for the most part. So, all right. While I've got you, a quick hit on the weekend. I saw that. The temperatures did not prevent nearly 30,000 from thronging Oaklawn for Southwest Day.
Well, this was the first, you know, quote, you know, I think, big day, so to speak, we've had in the normal range when we would be running, and I think the fans responded, and we didn't have any rain for the first time in about a month. But as far as a kickoff for the 3-year-old fillies and the 3-year-old colts, I think we hit it out pretty good. As we start with the fillies, we had the Martha Washington, and which is an ungraded $200,000, but it was still worth points. And Secret Oath, who had won earlier in the meet impressively, and you never know if they're going to follow up. Boy, she was super impressive for Wayne Lucas. First time, I forget if it was first time going long or not, but first time in a stake, I think. And I might be wrong about that, too. But first time impressively here at Oaklawn in a stake going long. She was just full of run the whole way around there. Louis Contreras did whatever he could to kind of hold her back, and finally, towards the top of the lane, he just said, "Let's go," and she opened up. So she went off at 1-5, or 1-2, excuse me, and you know, wasn't nothing hidden, but you really like to see them moving on. She's headed for the Honeybee next, which is the next progression for us, and then into the Fantasy. But I tell you what. You take a look at her. There were some murmurs going around, of course. Oh, let's run her. You know, maybe we'll run her against the boys, but we'll probably look at that further down the road. But she was very impressive. There was some funky winds going on during the day and during the week. You'll see earlier in the day and earlier Friday, there were some times that were slow. And I guess it was a huge headwind going up the backside because there were some different times during the day. So I guess there was some headwinds going both directions here. So if you see some times that look a little off, that's why. And there were winds. So I know I think it was Friday. I had to time a couple races with my iPhone. Just to go, like, oh my gosh, can they really be going that slow? And sure enough, they did. And that was the reason. But anyway, the three-year-old boys, we came into it. We talked about it, obviously, on Friday coming in, and, you know, we've all seen this act before where Bob Baffert sends a horse in and wins, and he did this time, but it wasn't quite as easy as it has been in the past. Newgrange, I needed to be urged, to say it mildly, most of the way down the stretch, and Johnny V never gave up, and kind of grinded away, and then inside the 16th pole, Newgrange picked up a little bit of interest and moved on and finished with a lot of interest. And then if you want to see a real good interpretation of the race, read Jay Privman's analysis of the race. Very good. So he had mentioned Barbara Road, who finished second, had a kind of a bad trip, so I went and watched the replay before we came on. Absolutely. This horse was wide the whole way, flattened out a little bit inside the 16th pole, but really showed a lot of interest around. And this is where, you know, we talk about it every year in these prep races. You know, the winner's fine. You know, you've seen the winner. Look back inside these races further. Look for that horse that ran second, third, fourth, maybe even fifth, that did have a little trouble, that has a reason to improve. And I tell you, coming out of here, Barbara Road, if he gets a smoother trip, Ricardo Santana, who rides this course better than anybody, he was on the horse, and he just kind of knew that that's the trip he was going to get. Let's make the most of it, and he sure did. So keep your eye on Barbara Road down the, you know, in the next races. He's going to be a price wherever he goes. And Ben Diesel improved from the 14 hole last time into the rail, had a great trip, and had every opportunity at the 8th pole to make a run, flattened out a little bit too. So, but he was in a good spot too as well. But real good race to watch. Keep your eyes. This was kind of like the sign, like, okay, let's start watching. The Derby's, 4 months away, and it's time to keep your eyes. But we're very, very happy. Like you said, the crowd was big, and, we're starting to kick in. We got to get a couple more weeks of this weather here where you just don't know what it's going to be, but come when the real preps come, the place is going to be packed, and anyway, looking forward to that when the weather gets above 40 or 50 for 3 days in a row.
Yeah, soon enough. It was fun, you know, watching from Vegas, and particularly on Sunday, you know, I hadn't thought to bring this up, but there was the Joe Petalino cap horse, and we all kind of sensed that there was going to be potential for that Arkansas bred group the Sunday 3rd. And sure enough, you got a bomb and it had an effect, actually, that race that got I think Sally, was that the race that Sally, I can't remember if it was canoodling or if it was, that would have been Saturday. So I'm not sure. There was a couple of people vaulted into the top 10 off of Joe Petalino.
Well, you can count on those Arkansas bred races to provide some kind of excitement either in the paddock or on the racetrack. And you can always look for a price there, too. So congratulations. Congratulations to everyone that did well. The winner was David Harrison. Congratulations to him and everybody that scored. I really sounds like a great place to be. I'm going to try and get there next year, one way or another, either sitting at a table or sitting with you. But I got to take that in one of these years.
You've been threatening to come for years.
I know. Well, we had the early start this year kind of knocked me out for this year, so we'll see. I talked to a buddy of mine the other day. He said, let's make an effort. I've never made an effort to try and qualify, so if I might make a little effort here during the summer to try and earn my way in, and then that'd be another story. Then I would definitely be coming. So anyway, I'm glad you got out there, and it just sounds like a great time.
It always is. Well, I Rick, I appreciate it. I wanted to get this in on everybody. The Biocoa starts the road to the Apple Blossom coming up Saturday, right? I think. Yeah, Biocoa Saturday.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more on Friday, but we're in high gear here now.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter, and we'll get back to Rick on Friday for our regular Oaklawn weekend preview. Hammer, I appreciate it.
All right. See you at the races, everybody.
Rick Hammerly, folks. Mike Pipey is going to join us, and we'll talk about canoodling, as we mentioned. Let me slip in a couple of other news while Casey raises Mike, and... You might have seen yesterday, the Fleet Alex has been pensioned at Gainesway. He's 20, and so it could be, if he can live out his days like Alphabet Soup another 10 years, that'd be great. So visitors to Gainesway, you'll be able to see him there. He's not going to the horse park or to old friends, so he'll be at Gainesway. And of course, the horse country program that when anybody goes to Kentucky, build in time to tour the farms, because you can do it. You go visit old friends, but you can go to the stud farms as well. And so Fleet Alex fans, and there's a lot. There's no shortage of a Fleet Alex fans, and had a career that was cut a little short. He had that. Did he have the saucer? The saucer? Not a saucer fracture. He had a little bone bruising, maybe. He and Smarty had those kinds of career ending. But a lot of things could be tied. I think we at the time. I'll have to go back and check. But I think we tied some of it to the incident in the Preakness. When he went essentially to his knees at full speed. It's still one of the most unbelievable moments in, not just in Triple Crown history, but in racing history. Mike Pipey joins us. I've been way too long. Mike, congratulations on Canoodling's win in the Megahertz Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you. Philly ran really well and got a really, really good ride by the boy that came in to ride her.
Talk a little bit, first of all, putting her, on the grass, because that part of it is clearly, a major element. I mean, it had been, a year and a half, give or take, since she turfed?
Ran as a younger horse on the grass when she was here before. Todd Fincher had sent her out to me, and he actually had wanted to pick out the race after her first race. I mean, she clearly was here to get a graded stakes win, because they just don't have a lot of those where he's at. And the win catapulted her value like way more than the purse the other day, like by margins, I mean, I think she's related to Shanghai Bobby. And I mean, she just went to a whole different level financially in terms of her value. And it is what it is, but it was a big win. It was a big win, a big ride, and a great move, for Todd to pick out that race and get in the spot. I mean, it's it was just a great day for everybody.
And she had, you know, she had basically been with Fincher in New Mexico, and was this part of a two-pronged, you know, because you started her in the La Brea on opening day, was this kind of a two-pronged idea, you know, to you know, take a shot at the grade one and see if she couldn't nail something there, and then if that didn't work, you know, stretch her out and turf her?
Right, correct, you know. You know, I don't know, I haven't talked back to those to Todd about exactly what we're going to do or not do, and you know where her next race will be. We have enough time to think about this regardless, but obviously she can go both ways, you know, turf or dirt. You don't need, the race will come to her when she's ready to go either way, just because it's the way it is, you know. She should have every chance to do what she's going to do, you know. So yeah, so that part is good, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, clearly you've had enough time with her. I mean, she's been with you, what, you know, 6-7 weeks?
Correct, you know. So, yeah. She was here more than a few weeks before the race on opening weekend. And then, so, yeah, she's been with us a while. There's no doubt about it, you know.
You know, under this scenario, you got to make some determinations, and it also shows the kind of cooperation, Mike, that goes on between Barnes in a situation like this.
Correct. You know, yep, absolutely.
Well, and you know, I for me, watching the race in Vegas during the contest, for Rome Quirinos, that's his first graded stake win. So, I mean, there's a lot of nice things that happened out of this.
Yeah, no question about it. He rode a great race. I mean, he crossed over, got her over the right way, easy. If you watch real closely, he waited for, you know, you got a limited amount of times you can touch a horse, and he not only nursed the fractions beautifully and let her relax, he kicked away on the turn at the right time, and then he saved himself and the whips for late, and then he also tightened up the room. Juan Hernandez couldn't get through on the rail, and he tried again, and he realized, hey, there's not enough in here. I mean, that was kind of some old-school riding that came into play that you just don't see too many of those races anymore where the rides make the difference in an outcome of a race, and in this case, it really did. He rode a really good race, you know? I mean, he did the fractions right, he saved the whip for the right time, and then he tightened up the space on the two-horse down on the rail, and if that two-horse goes through, there's a good chance that horse is going through to win, you know? And it was a big difference in how he rode the horse. He rode a really good race, you know?
I completely agree. And we were watching, and there were plenty of people, because it was a cap horse for, you know, for contest purposes. There were, you know, as it became more evident off the turn that, you know, when he spirited away, that was sort of a Luis Saez style ride. And I love that, because it sends everybody behind her into a panic.
Right. Yep.
And they start to scrub and try to make up, and he really nursed the fractions. 25-1, 49-4, 114-2, and for him to come into Santa Anita and turn in that kind of a performance, you know, in a good graded stake, and that was, you know, there was nothing wrong with that field with Warren Showtime and Bodicita and
no,
the like.
No, it was good, credible field. I mean, you can't take anything away from what happened. It was a good effort, you know? So, no question about it, you know?
Absolutely. Well, now you got to convince Todd to convince the owners to let her, you know, she's four. It's not like she needs to be rushed off to the to the barn. She's only going to have one baby a year.
Yep, absolutely, you know? So,
kind of nice.
Yep, we gotta see if she can add more to her resume. It's gonna be more value on her if she's to be sold at some point. Good stallion on her, good family on her. It was a home run kind of day for the connections there that owned her. That's as good as it gets in the game to send yourself up to such a good value in a broodmare situation, because it's hard to buy horses with pedigree and family at a sale. A lot of people just keep them and breed them themselves, and they may even do that. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody about what they're going to do there, but it's nonetheless, the value's there if they want it, you know? So it was a big day for them, period, to get that done.
Well, and you know, for the remainder of the winter season anyway, it's kind of nice to have a fresh face on the California filly and mare turf scene. And that was one reason also to consider her, because, you know, the community of those horses have been, frankly, both male and female. It's been sort of the usual suspects. So bringing in a new face makes some sense too.
Yes, absolutely. You know,
I love it. You know, and I should mention, because I've certainly watched your smiling tiger, the Tommy Hutton horse, Funkenstein. You at some point he's going to win. I thought, yeah, you could have had a 2-win day on Saturday.
That poor horse just loves to pull himself up and wait for something to run with. He loves that second. It's unfortunate, because I think if I could get him in a 7-8 situation, I think he'll be dynamite. It's just, it's race availability. I mean, he's not really a 6-furlong horse, and I don't think he's really, you know, the miles are probably just a little long for him too, you know. So if you could see him get into a little bit better of a distance race, and we could get a 7-8, I think he'll get over the hump with breaking his maiden, you know. So it's been a little bit of a tough run for him with all those seconds. So,
well, for those that haven't bet on Funkenstein, he's run 11 times in maiden specials and maiden claiming. It doesn't really matter what level it doesn't. That seems, as you say, he's one of these horses that wants somebody to finish in front of him. But he's got 7 seconds. He's made close to $50,000. It's one of those career maiden scenarios. But it's obvious he's got talent, and when you read, Mike, when you read Andy Harrington, it's obvious that, you know, he's capable.
Right. Exactly.
Pretty funny.
Yep.
Well, talk a little bit. Let's catch up. It's been way too long since we've talked. I do see that, you know, you've got, it feels like you've got, you know, some other live runners in the barn.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not at my peak of numbers right now, but I've kind of eliminated and took out of the equation a lot of horses that weren't just going to do us any good, you know, so we tried to thin it out a little bit and rebuild. So I'm kind of in a rebuilding stage of, you know, going forward again, and we'll get some babies in this year and take my chances that way. You know, a lot of horses that aren't going to do you any good, ain't going to do the owner good, ain't going to do me no good, and that's kind of where I'm trying to, probably our amount of starts will stay down a little bit in the next couple months, but I'm bringing some good solid horses back from layoff. I had a treacherous point in time where there were more than a few good horses that had some injuries. I had Scardo get hurt, Rip City, Bye Bye Miss Pie, Tigre de Slugo. I mean, these horses are all back in the barn and doing good right now, and obviously I got some ground to cover to get them ready to run again, you know, but they'll be solid when they come back, and it's unfortunate that sometimes you go through those points in time to have to get those horses back on their feet. But if things go well, we'll be back in a little better spot, you know.
Well, you got to be happy with that season debut from Wish They All Could Be, the Calbred by Grazen.
Yes, correct. And she runs this weekend. We're going to go to the turf on a turf sprint with her, and because you're allowed to do that with a Calbred, I'm not sure the turf is her better game, but when I routed her on the turf, I think it was too far for her, so she might sprint back on it and have a shot. So we'll just have to see how that goes, you know. So,
well, and you mentioned
that a good shot on Sunday.
Nice. So we'll watch for the entry, and you know, it's funny you mentioned the turf. Certainly, the return. You're one of the horsemen out there that has made the most of the downhill turf course historically. So you must have been happy to get things back coming down the hill.
Oh, I'm very happy to see the hill come back, and I'll have my chance to get some horses on there pretty soon. And we can't wait. We love the hill. There's no doubt about it.
Well, and for those that that aren't necessarily big West Coast fans or those that know the history, of course, misdirection and did Turbulent came down the hill a couple of times. No,
no,
just dirt.
Never sent her on the grass. She was undefeated horse, 5 for 5 on the synthetic track, but we never tried the grass with her.
Okay, because I guess that era. All right, because when you came to, was it Turbulent Descent you came to Saratoga with?
Yes. She won the test.
There you go. All right. Now, but misdirection. In fact, it's funny. I don't know what we were in the. What this was? This must have been in the event center at Bally's, and I looked up and I thought of you even then. I saw Jim Rome was doing the show, and I looked up and I kind of connected all the dots. I said, I got to get Pipey.
Yeah,
I love it. Well, Mike, I'm anxious to hear what's going to happen with canoodling. It feels like you should be going forward. Obviously a good fit in that mile and 16th even, and she can actually shorten up too. She'd be a candidate.
Absolutely.
Down the hill.
Yeah, pretty solid filly to do everything she does, which is she goes turf and dirt. She's stakes winner on both. Very hard for many horses to be that, and that will be attractive at a sale as well, because you're bringing a horse in that could take their game at a high level on two different surfaces, and that isn't easy for a lot of horses to be stakes winners at both turf and dirt like that,
Pioneer of the Nile. So she's got, and she's won, she's won going two turns. The sprint success. I mean, she's got it. You got to try her down the hill. She's cutting back from the mile. It's a natural.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right,
All right, I'll send Fincher. I'll pimp Fincher on that.
Yeah.
Mike, terrific to catch up, and delighted for you and for Rome Carinos to get his first graded stake win, and we'll be watching, and we'll wish they all could be on Sunday, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, that sounds great.
Mike Pipey, everybody, and any kind of horse. This is a cool story that he took this filly in and was able to get not just black type, but get graded black type. And you can follow Mike on Twitter, actually, which I just looked, and there he is. Under his name, and it's P-U-Y-P-E, for those that don't know how to spell Pipey. Mike Pipey, folks. Let's take a break. We'll come back, top of the hours here, and Steve Asmussen's going to join us next at the races Tuesday, back home in New York, at least for 2 weeks, and then off we go. Off we go to New Orleans. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three.